darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio, the Urban Family Talk. We had a little technical difficulties in the beginning there, but we are on line now. So I'm glad to be with you. We're going to revisit today a portion of scripture, 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 23 through 28. It's actually the immediate text that came to mind as this whole Judge Kavanaugh debacle came to the fore in the public conversation. And I want to revisit it because I think we're witnessing something play out on the national stage that has, I'll just say, a significant spiritual impetus. And I think that we will be unable to fully understand what's happening if we try to evaluate it with merely natural eyes and ears and reasoning, and we don't include any type of spiritual understanding in the conversation. All right, so if you remember, 1 Kings 3, this is right after Solomon, in the earlier parts in 1 Kings chapter 3, where Solomon cried out to the Lord for wisdom because he had become king over this great people, and Solomon saw himself as small in his own eyes, and so he appealed to the Lord for wisdom. To navigate navigate the kingdom as its monarch in Israel. And soon thereafter, you had an issue arise where the Bible tells you explicitly, again, this is one of my plugs, who needs Netflix and chill? Who needs Hulu? You do what you do if you have the scripture, right? The Bible tells us that there were two prostitutes. One had a baby, then the other prostitute, they were living together, had a baby 3 days later. We all know how babies come into the world, right? The Bible tells us that this is who these people were. And in the middle of the night, the lady who had the second baby 3 days later rolled over on her child, her newborn infant, and killed him. Time progressed shortly thereafter. Then the prostitute who had killed her own child, basically, stole the newborn baby from the first woman. After doing so, the woman whose baby it actually was, the only remaining alive baby, appealed to Solomon to judge between the two of them. And that is where we pick up, because both women were claiming that the baby was theirs. The proper mother said, no, it's not her baby, it's my baby. But the non-mother, I'll say it that way, said, no, it's my baby. And so we pick up with that at verse 23. And I'll read it, and then I'll make some additional comments. Then the king, verse 23, then the king said, the one says, this is my son that is alive, and your son is dead. And the other says, no, but your son is dead, and my son is the living one. And the king said, bring me a sword. So a sword was brought before the king, and the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then the woman whose son was alive said to the king, because her heart yearned for her son, oh, my lord, give her to the living child, and by no means put him to death. But the other said, he shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide him. Then the king answered and said, give the living child to the first woman, and by no means put him to death. She is his mother. And all Israel heard of the judgment that the king had rendered, and they stood in awe of the king because they perceived that the wisdom of God was in him to do justice. Now, why am I revisiting this scripture today? Well, I think we are witnessing play out on the national stage before us a very similar phenomenon. If you noticed, the woman whose baby it was not, she had no problem. She had no problem with destroying, generally speaking, the mother-child relationship in order to have her way with a victory before King Solomon. Going further, her commitment to her willingness to destroy the mother-child relationship extended all the way to the point to where this woman was willing even to destroy the baby if it meant that she could win before the king. What we are watching on the national stage, and I'm going to dig into some of the facts and details and all of that stuff with the Judge Kavanaugh confirmation process and the entire circus that surrounds that. But I believe what we are witnessing now is a portion of the political elites in our country who have abandoned any fidelity to God and replaced it with government being their God. One of the chief evidences of their commitment to godlessness is their willingness to go to the mat for the protection of the right to kill children in the womb. Just rewind the tape a little bit. The previous administration of former President Barack Obama, do you ever remember him expressing a willingness to shut down the government over anything other than abortion? Former President Obama said he was willing to shut down the government if one penny of funding was removed from Planned Parenthood. Now, in terms of the entirety of the national budget, $500 billion is not a big amount when you compare it to the $3 trillion that the federal government takes in annually, basically. It's still a whole lot of money to pay for the killing of innocent children. But former President Obama said it was a non-starter for Republicans to even consider taking a penny from Planned Parenthood. Fast forward today. What is the primary source of objection that these regressives in Congress, and specifically the Senate, have with Judge Brett Kavanaugh? Their primary concern is that he poses a threat to Roe versus Wade. If you remember, I shared how in the confirmation hearings, they tried to get him to commit to Roe versus Wade as basically being binding super precedent, when I thought he very deftly, with the assistance of Senator Ben Sasse, articulated well, one, first and foremost, that he did not find precedent to be absolutely binding in all circumstances, using examples that everybody would agree with, Plessy versus Ferguson being overturned, Dred Scott being overturned, and use that line of reasoning to conclude that, well, certainly, not only has the Supreme Court been wrong, but it is the duty of Supreme Court justices to identify the error and to correct it, which laid the foundation after it was too late for the Democrats to stop it, after it was too late for the progressives to stop it, where he not only recognized that it is appropriate to overturn bad precedent, but it is their duty. Fast forward a little further, these allegations concerning Judge Brett Kavanaugh did not arise until after the confirmation hearing was already over. And they realized, he made it through that confirmation hearing unscathed. And I'm going to take it a little bit further, because remember, in the scriptural account in 1 Kings 3, verses 23 through 28, there was not only a willingness to destroy the baby in an effort to win the political victory, if you will, but there also was an abandonment of logic. Remember, Solomon said, bring a sword and let's divide the child. And the woman whose baby it wasn't said, yeah, let's do it. It's kind of the same type of logic or lack of logic that is prevalent when people say, oh, Supreme Court precedent is binding. And they in less than 10 years overturn precedent they don't like. Bowers v. Hardwick, we have to overturn that so we can find a constitutional right for sodomy on the road to a right for same-sex couples to marry. It's not any logical consistency. If stare decisis in precedent is to be binding at all times in all circumstances, then there should be none that the very same progressives who want Brett Kavanaugh and others to identify Roe versus Wade as binding precedent, they should not celebrate then the overturning of precedent. But there is no need for logical consistency when your commitment is to godlessness. It's the very same type of godlessness. And I made this point at Values Voters last week. That's where I was when I was out. And I said, it's amazing to me. The very same people who want to persuade the nation that America is an inherently racist, evil country, that for people that happen to look like me, that there could be nothing good that can happen for you, people that have a heritage like my wife that are Hispanic, that this country is inherently racist. So then my question to them is, well, then why aren't you complicit in expanding that evil if you want to argue for open borders? If America is hard for Hispanics, why do you want to open the borders to blow it open to let everybody from El Salvador, from Peru, from every nation, from Latin America to come into our country? You can't have it both ways. And I'm going to tell you the why, folks. There is no need for logical consistency when your commitment is to godlessness. Who is the author of confusion? Who is the author of chaos? Who is the one that the Bible says comes only, the Bible says that, only to steal, kill, and destroy? So when you see evidence of the evil one, though it may come with smooth tongue delivery, though it may come with emotive appeals, the objective remains the same: stealing, killing, and destruction. So you have people who would say, and I'm going to make this point a little bit further, to say, you got to believe the woman when she makes an allegation or makes a statement. And my question is, which woman? Which women? Should we believe the women who said that Judge Kavanaugh's character is impeccable and beyond reproach? Should we believe one of the women who was named as one of the witnesses by Christine Blasey Ford, who said this didn't happen? Should we believe her? Oh, no, you see. We don't believe all women. We only believe the women who argue for the division of the baby. That's the women we want to believe. So I want to make this very clear to every single one of you who are listening to this program. Though the arguments are about a Supreme Court confirmation, the issue is spiritual at the core. What we are witnessing is the fact that there are people who recognize, wait a minute, our death covenant with the shedding of innocent blood is in jeopardy. So what do we need to do? We need to do anything we can to make sure that it does not become jeopardized. Who cares about Senate confirmation hearing procedures? Who cares about precedent? Who cares about the fact that it will literally purge from the potential roles in the future anybody who would willing to submit themselves for public service? And since we're talking about, I played last week when I was on the air, the founder of the Juan Kett Online magazine, who said it didn't matter to her if Brett Kavanaugh was guilty or not. All that mattered to her is whether or not Brett Kavanaugh displayed sensitivity to a woman's pain. But she didn't stop there. She went further to say that I don't believe he could be sensitive to a woman's pain because of his views on life, because he's pro-life. So if we're going to be sensitive to a woman's pain, does that include Amy Kavanaugh, who's receiving death threats, who is being harassed incessantly? No. Because just like people who happen to have a permanent tan and a darker paint job like me, who doesn't walk lock and step with the regressive mantra on all points of regressivism, we don't qualify as black people. Just like we don't qualify as black people to the political pundits and the social elitists of the day, neither does Amy Kavanaugh or any woman who doesn't agree with the, you know, string up Judge Kavanaugh by any means necessary. If you disagree with that mantra, then you are not a woman, and nor are you worthy of being protected. Your pain is irrelevant.
Government profits from aborted babies. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The FDA was exposed for buying fresh, aborted fetal organs from Advanced Bioscience Resources. The shocking reason is to use it to create humanized mice with human immune systems. This is sick and morally wrong. Pro-life leaders sent a letter to the head of Health and Human Services demanding this stop. It states, "We expect far better from our federal agencies, especially under the leadership of a courageous pro-life president. It is completely unacceptable to discover that the FDA is using federal tax dollars for human body parts taken from babies who are aborted. No taxpayer dollars should continue to go to this gruesome practice. This abortion company is currently under investigation by the Department of Justice for selling aborted baby tissue for hundreds of dollars for profit, which itself is illegal. This must be stopped. Stay informed at lc.org.
Announcing the latest book from Dr. Robert Jeffress.
It's called Choosing the Extraordinary Life, God's Seven Secrets for Success and Significance. And, you know, it's a book about how to experience in the here and now what God has for you.
So your assignment today, people, is to go buy a copy of Robert's new book.
Choosing the Extraordinary Life by Dr. Robert Jeffress. Available now at afastore.net.
afastore.net, afastore.net. Yeah. I'll say it again, afastore.net.
Right. and I just rededicated my life to Jesus Christ. I'm listening to your broadcast.
It's amazing to hear how God is using American Family Radio.
You're taking a stand for the Lord in our nation.
Would you take a moment to share your story? Call 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893.
Thank you that you truly are American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Catholic Church in Pennsylvania is reeling from a massive scandal involving priests sexually abusing children. The grand jury found at least 1,000 victims over the last 70 years. The source of this scandal goes back to the early 1960s when the church struggled to recruit priests because of the celibacy requirement. So the church began admitting homosexuals into their seminary since they had no interest in marriage. The results have been entirely predictable. There are two takeaways here. One, the link between homosexuality and pedophilia is now impossible to dismiss. And two, many of our Catholic friends are calling for the church to admit married men into the priesthood. They're right. Peter, the first pope, was married, so there is no reason priests today shouldn't be free to imitate his example.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I have to thank Miki Addison for stepping in for me while I was away. You all know it if you listened to her while I was gone. She's amazing. And she'll be back this Thursday and Friday because I will be out again. I'll be traveling and speaking. I will be participating in the Louisiana Family Forum's 20th Anniversary Gala. That is going to be in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area. So I encourage you to go to LouisianaFamilyForum.org. LAFamilyForum.org is the website for more information. I'd love to see you there, to meet the people there. Every time I'm in my home state, I get such a wonderful reception, and I'm looking forward to being there with you all this weekend. That'll be Thursday evening this week while I will be there representing the American Family Association and celebrating 20 years of faith, family, and freedom with our friends at the Louisiana Family Forum. All right. Now, having said that, I just, while I was away, I was like, man, I need to get back on the program so I can really go into what's happening here. So you mean to tell me this is how this is going to happen? So it was after the fourth, I'd say, of the five people who Christine Blasey Ford said were in the room with her allegations. And of course, you don't need me to remind you of the allegations, because the Talking Snake media would love nothing more than just to rehearse these allegations over and over and over again for your hearing in public. So in the course of making her allegations about, excuse me, I had to sneeze, about Judge Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford noted that there were, wait, let me get it, where did I put it? That there were three people, yes, three people in the room besides herself and Brett Kavanaugh when this incident literally 36 years ago was alleged to have occurred. She identified one, Mrs. Leland Ingham Kaiser, two, Mr. Mark Judge, and three, Mr. Patrick P.J. Smith, as being other people in the room besides herself and Brett Kavanaugh, right? So slowly but surely, after Dianne Feinstein sat on this since July, Brett Kavanaugh was announced as the nominee by President Trump in August. Before Brett Kavanaugh was announced as the nominee, Dianne Feinstein had access to the so-called anonymous allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. But she sat on it for all of that time, and it was not until the coordinated efforts to delay the confirmation hearings had failed. It was not until their attempts to, I call it the UTEP two-step of regressivism. Step one, racism. That fails. Step two, sexual allegations. That's the UTEP two-step. So after step one failed, when Spartacus Booker, remember him, who said that he was risking censure and expulsion from the Senate to reveal to the American public information that would show that Brett Kavanaugh was a racist, and emails following 9/11. That failed because the email showed, in fact, Brett Kavanaugh was the opposite. He opposed racial profiling in post-9/11 security procedures. That fell like a thud. Nobody says anything about that anymore. That's why I bring it up to you when I can in the context of this conversation. That felt like a thud. So then the Senate Democrats on the Judiciary Committee tried to delay the vote on Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation by the Senate Committee. That failed when Senator Grassley, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, established the vote that was supposed to take place last week. So after all of that, though she had this letter since July, Dianne Feinstein then says, oh, wait, by the way, I have something else that I want to bring to the table, even though I had an opportunity to ask Brett Kavanaugh about it under oath, even though we submitted 1,200 questions to him after the confirmation hearing, which is the most questions that any Supreme Court nominee has received after confirmation hearings combined, not just any one individual. These are the most questions combined. The questions didn't include any of that about Christine Blasey Ford, to which Judge Kavanaugh responded with 265 pages worth of responses. Even though none of that was included then, now Dianne Feinstein says, oh, but I want to bring this issue to the attention of the American public, even though the anonymous letter said that she did not want to come public with it. All right? I want everybody to stay with me on the timeline here. So after all of that, what initially was an anonymous allegation, the alleger was then identified as Professor Christine Blasey Ford. She said there were three people in addition to Brett Kavanaugh and herself who were in the room. And so one by one, each of those people said, that didn't happen. That didn't happen like that. So even though Christine Ford cannot remember where it happened, nor when it happened, her mind is fuzzy on multiple significant details of the allegations. To boot, the people she identified as witnesses have all one by one said, First out of the gate was Mark Judge. What did Mark Judge say? Mark Judge wrote a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee where he said he did not recall the party and never saw Brett Kavanaugh act in the manner that Ford described. Next out of the gate, you had Mrs. Leland Ingham Kaiser, who was identified by Ford as being a person as a witness to these allegations. Simply put, Ms. Kaiser said that she does not know Mr. Kavanaugh, and she has no recollection of ever being at a party or gathering where he was present, with or without Dr. Ford, end quote. Which is why I raised the point in the first segment. Well, you should believe the woman. Let's believe the women. Which women? Are we going to believe Leland Ingham Kaiser? Are we going to believe Ms. Kaiser? Oh, they don't want to hear from Ms. Kaiser. Why? Because she doesn't aid their narrative. Going further, a witness identified by the abbreviation PJ, Patrick Smith, was supposedly a witness to the assault. So as the third witness came out saying this specifically, quote, I understand that I've been identified by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford as the person she remembers as PJ, who supposedly was present at the party she described in her statements to the Washington Post. I am issuing this statement today to make it clear to all involved that I have no knowledge of the party in question, nor do I have any knowledge of the allegations of improper conduct she has leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. Personally speaking, I have known Brett Kavanaugh since high school, and I know him to be a person of great integrity, a great friend, and I have never witnessed any improper conduct by Brett Kavanaugh towards women. To safeguard my own privacy and anonymity, I respectfully request that the committee accept this statement in response to any inquiry the committee may have, end quote. He submitted that to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, just as, in a manner of speaking, the ink is drying on this final denial, because the only two people left are Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Ford. Based on Christine Ford's own allegations, just as the last witness identified by Dr. Ford is crumbling, guess what the Dems have in store, boy, I tell you. What do they have? A new accuser. Ho, 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 ho. And the new accuser's account was published and put forward by the New Yorker magazine. And there were reports issued by the New Yorker magazine and the New York Times together. But the author, one of the authors, Ronan Farrow, went on Good Morning America this morning to tell us a host of things. But again, you have to listen closely because Ronan Farrow tells us how the allegations by this new accuser by the name of a woman, the woman by the name of Deborah Ramirez, came to light. Listen to what Ronan Farrow says. It's clip number two.
Why did she come forward?
She came forward because Senate Democrats began looking at this claim. She did not flag this for those Democrats. This came to her, to the attention of people on the Hill independently, and it's really cornered her into an awkward position.
Oh! Now, I'm going to translate this for you guys because Ronan did it in a very prettified manner. We call it prettified in the Ninth Ward. This newer allegations came forward because Senate Democrats tracked this woman down, harassed her, and I'll say it this way, persuaded her to come forward. You don't believe me? Did you know that the New Yorker magazine's piece, buried way down some 2,000 words deep into the article, revealed that this Deborah Ramirez lady didn't want to come forward with anything because she wasn't sure the person was Judge Kavanaugh? Your radio isn't broken. The YouTube, the interweb connections are not broken. Thus, article itself, Lord, the article itself tells you that the woman said, man, I ain't said nothing about this for 35 years because I wasn't sure who it was. She admitted that I was sloppy drunk. And this is even assuming anything like this happened. But she said, I was sloppy drunk, slurring my words. I don't really even know. I'm not even sure what happened. But some 2,000 words into the article, Ronan Farrow and his co-author reveal. I'll say it this way. I'm quoting from the article now. Quote, in her initial conversations, this is Deborah Ramirez, by the way. Quote, in her initial conversations with the New Yorker, she was reluctant to characterize Kavanaugh's role in the alleged incident with certainty. But after 6 days of carefully assessing her memories and consulting with her attorney, Ramirez said that she felt confident enough of her recollections to say that she remembers Kavanaugh. Now, that's they buried that 2,000 words into the article. What a woman is admitting, well, they coached me up for 6 days. For 6 days. Now, listen. Some of you may not understand how deep this is. I tried cases for a living, all right? I tried cases with victims of sexual assault. You want to know what the defense attorney would do if I put a witness on the stand and they asked her, well, when did you decide to come forward with these allegations? And my witness said, well, after speaking with Mr. Hamilton for 6 days, after he told me for 6 days that it was Brett Kavanaugh, then I decided to come forward and testify. This is what happened here, folks. This is what happened here. So let me put this together for you to help you really understand what's happening. Because the entire objective, and Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii admitted it, she revealed it to us I'm telling you, they always reveal it. In her interview with Politico's podcast, I forgot the name of it at the moment, but I have it in here. Senator Mazie Hirono told you about it, but let me explain what's happening here. So after all of the tricks and the delay tactics fail, a vote was sent. Then Senator Feinstein says, wait, there's more. The ping-ponging back and forth. Well, the initial cry, remember outcry? Let her speak. Let her speak. Let her speak. The Republican said, okay, we'll let her speak. Then the victim herself says, I don't want to speak. But then the Senate Democrat says, but y'all better hold up that vote. The Republicans wring their hands. And just today, Dr. Ford finally agrees to speak. But only after there's an allegation of another woman who conveniently is also demanding an FBI investigation. You see what's going on here. So now this woman has agreed to speak on Thursday. What happens as a result of that? Well, of course, any votes on Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation only from the committee. That's not even the full Senate yet. It's going to be pushed beyond the October 1st deadline, which is the start date of the next Supreme Court term. So that means that the next Supreme Court term is going to begin with 8 Supreme Court justices. Does anybody see what's happening here? So now, Christine Ford agrees to testify. Whether she testifies or not, do you all expect the Democrats to be satisfied? No. Why? Because now Deborah Ramirez has demanded a FBI investigation. And, oh, by the way, I didn't even add this in yet, that Michael Avenatti, you remember Stormy Daniels' lawyer, has lobbed even more accusations saying that he has some women who want to come and testify that Brett Kavanaugh was involved in lucid, alcoholic-infused sexual things. So, of course, they're going to want to delay that even further. So I have more to say, but let me finish with Deborah Ramirez's testimony. So it's an amazing piece written by Ryan Saavedra at thedailywire.com where he goes through 10 important things to note from the New Yorker magazine and the New York Times' article that they buried in the piece. So, number one, that the New Yorker magazine could not find a single witness who could put Brett Kavanaugh at this other party. So Christine Ford alleged a party when Kavanaugh was in high school. Deborah Ramirez is alleging a party when Kavanaugh was in Yale in college. The New Yorker magazine has not found one witness who said Judge Kavanaugh was at the party. Folks, back in the days when there was a thing called journalism, when there was a thing called journalistic integrity, a publication wouldn't even publish this. They wouldn't even publish this. But you know what? The baby being split in half is on the docket, you see. So we publish it because what happens as a result of publishing it? We have an opportunity to push the Kavanaugh hearings back even further. Let me give you some more from this New Yorker magazine article in the New York Times magazine, New York Times publication. In addition to not being able to find a single witness to put Kavanaugh at the party, the New York Times could not find a single person who could corroborate Ramirez's claims. Not a single person. So literally what you have happening is that allegations that no one can confirm or corroborate, but they are being used to stop the Senate from confirming a judicial nominee. Buried more than 1,400 words in the New Yorker magazine story, Ronan Farrow and his co-author Meyer provide a quote from one of the men named by Ramirez. It says, quote, one of the male classmates who Ramirez said egged on Kavanaugh denied any memory of the party. He says, quote, I don't think Brett would flash himself to Debbie or anyone for that matter. Asked why he thought Ramirez was making the allegation, he responded, I have no idea. The other classmate who Ramirez said was involved in the incident commented, I have zero recollection. A third person that Ramirez claimed was at the party says she wasn't even there. She was not even present at the incident. So what I'm telling you is happening here, folks, and I'm going to use Senator Mazie Hirono's words to articulate this, is that this is a well-crafted scheme to delay the confirmation hearing vote the Judiciary Committee vote and the Senate confirmation for as long as possible to stymie the president's nomination.
Good news. You are not stuck with your health care plan. Really, you have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others, too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
Is President Trump making America great? This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. Great nations typically have a strong military, prosperous economy, and domestic security and equity. President Trump has strengthened America in many of these categories. But Christians should pray for him to set a better moral and interpersonal example. Psalm 2 says, "Take warning, O judges of the earth. Worship the Lord with reverence. Do homage to the Son, that he not become angry and you perish in the way. For his wrath may soon be kindled. How blessed are all who take refuge in him." Hear more about whether President Trump is making America great at thechristianworldview.org. This weekend, we'll take your phone calls and emails on the same topic.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Somewhere in America, at this very moment, a first grader is doing something that could be held against him in a future Supreme Court nomination. That's where we are in American politics, folks, a very bad place where rumor and innuendo trump the rule of law. The latest accusations against Judge Kavanaugh levied by The New Yorker could not even meet the editorial guidelines of The New York Times. Clearly, another attempt by Democrats to destroy this good man's name. But it's the invertebrate Republicans who bear a large part of the blame. Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley has capitulated to the Democrats time and again. Senator Dianne Feinstein has called for an immediate postponement of the confirmation hearing. In response, Chairman Grassley ought to call for an immediate vote. It's time to put a stop to the lies and the smears and the bullying. The politics of personal destruction must end. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Listen, I'm going to take phone calls this segment. The number to call if you want to be a part of the program is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. Zero. I want to try to make the remainder of these points as quickly as I can. There was another woman, and this is, folks, this is not my opinion. This was all in the New Yorker magazine's article and the New York Times article on this issue. Buried 1,700 words in the New Yorker magazine's piece, there was a woman who claims that she was best friends with Ramirez, who says Ramirez never mentioned the story and initially said her friend's accusations against Kavanaugh might be politically motivated. Now, this is a woman who is Ramirez's best friend. She said that the story says, quote, "The former friend who was married to the male classmate alleged to be involved and who signed the statement said of Ramirez, 'This is a woman I was best friends with. We shared intimate details of our lives, and I was never told this story by her or by anyone else. It never came up. I didn't see it. I never heard of it happening.' She said she hadn't spoken with Ramirez for about 10 years, but that the two women who had been close all through college, meaning herself and Ramirez, all through college, and Kavanaugh had remained part of what she called their larger social circle. In an initial conversation with The New Yorker, the best friend suggested that Ramirez may have been politically motivated. Later, she said that she did not know if this was the case." Now, this is all in the New Yorker magazine's own article. So how do you, with good conscience, publish this trash? I'm telling you, folks. I'm telling you, the fix is in. Now, not to be shut down by it, Brett Kavanaugh has come out swinging. He sent a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee where he says, and I guess, I don't know if I have time to read the whole thing. I'll do it, because I think it's important for us to hear it. He says, "Dear Chairman Grassley and Ranking Member Feinstein," so he sent this letter to Dianne Feinstein too. He says, quote, "When I testified in front of the Senate 3 weeks ago, I explained my belief that fair process is foundational to justice and to our democracy. At that time, I sat before the Senate Judiciary Committee for more than 31 hours and answered questions under oath. I then answered more questions at a confidential session. The following week, I responded to more than 1,200 written questions, more than have been submitted to all previous Supreme Court nominees combined. Only after that exhaustive process was complete did I learn through the news media about a 36-year-old allegation from high school that had been asserted months earlier and withheld from me throughout the hearing process. First, it was an anonymous allegation that I categorically and unequivocally denied. Soon after the accuser was identified, I repeated my denial on the record and made clear that I wished to appear before the committee. I then repeated my denial to committee investigators under criminal penalties for false statements." I'm going to pause right there. Did you hear what Brett Kavanaugh said? As soon as these allegations came up, federal agents came and asked me about them. I know it's a crime to lie to federal agents, and I told them the same thing I said publicly, under the understanding that criminal penalty exists if I'm found out to be lying to the FBI, for example. So what investigation do you want? Let me go on back to his letter. He goes on, quote, all of the witnesses identified by Dr. Ford as being present at the party she describes are on the record to the committee saying they have no recollection of any such party happening. I asked to testify before the committee again under oath as soon as possible so that both Dr. Ford and I could be both heard. I thank Chairman Grassley for scheduling that hearing for Thursday. Now, this is letters from today. Back to the letter. Quote, last night, another false and uncorroborated accusation from 35 years ago was published. Once again, those alleged to have been witnesses to the event deny it ever happened. There is now a frenzy to come up with something, anything that will block this process and a vote on my confirmation from occurring. These are smears, pure and simple, and they debase our public discourse, but they are also a threat to any man or woman who wishes to serve our country. Such grotesque and obvious character assassination, if allowed to succeed, will dissuade competent and good people of all political persuasions from service. As I told the committee during my hearing, a federal judge must be independent, not swayed by public or political pressure. That is the kind of judge I will always be. I will not be intimidated into withdrawing from this process. The coordinated effort to destroy my good name will not work. Absolutely right on, Judge Kavanaugh. Because that's what they hope. They hope to beat him down to the place to where he'll quit, to where he'll say, man, enough with this foolishness. I'm going to withdraw my name. But you don't want to know what else? You want to know who's really responsible for this circus going on continuously? You want to know who's responsible for it? The Senate Republicans. I'm going to tell you a little story of something I learned back on the block in the Ninth Ward. You don't get anywhere by running from bullies. At some point, you are going to have to stand up to the bully. The reason why the Democrats keep pulling this trash is because it works. It's because it works. You had a vote date scheduled, you pushed it back. You had a deadline set when you wanted Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, and it's now been pushed back. The time has come for Senate Republicans to say, look, enough is enough. Some of you are asking, why do they keep coming up with these crazy accusations? I'm telling you, because it works. They knew nothing else would get the Republicans to slow down the process for having Kavanaugh confirmed. So they come up with this craziness, unconfirmed, unsubstantiated, uncorroborated, yet it's keeping Republicans from holding the vote. Chuck Grassley should demand a vote on the same day that Dr. Ford testifies, if not sooner. If not sooner. You don't get anywhere by running from the bully. At some point, you have to turn around and tell Debo, I ain't running no more. This is my chain, Debo. This is my bike, Debo. Some of y'all may not know that reference, but some of you do. You can't keep running. You can't keep running. Republicans never try this kind of stuff. Not with the character assassination. The Merrick preventing a vote on Merrick Garland was done completely on procedural lines. But you didn't see any Republicans going out trashing Merrick Garland's character. You didn't see Merrick Garland dragged through the mud. No. But the Democrats do this because it works. Now, if you want to stop this from happening, Republicans, I'm talking to you, stand up now. Stand up now. Some of you all thought that by nominating Judge Kavanaugh, that they would avoid all of the delay tactics and the attempts to impede President Trump's nomination. How do you feel now? Kind of feels like you should have went with Amy Barrett anyway, doesn't it? Doesn't it? They certainly would not have been able to come up with any sexual assault allegations, not in this Me Too movement. I'm telling you, you have to wake up. And this is part of the reason why the American Family Association has been calling on Republicans to get rid of the filibuster. Because do you think for a moment if the Democrats win the presidency that they won't hesitate to get rid of it? Harry Reid already told you. I meant to tell you what Senator Mazie Hirono said. Let me do that and then I'll get to the phone lines. During her interview on Politico's podcast called Off Message, that's Politico's podcast, Mazie Hirono said, quote, Democrats could keep the open seat on the Supreme Court vacant until after the 2020 election if Brett Kavanaugh's nomination collapses and Democrats regain control of the Senate in November. Do y'all? It's the same thing that Harry Reid said. Remember when Barack Obama was still in office, Harry Reid said, oh, we won't hesitate to get rid of the filibuster should Hillary Clinton win the election. He said it. He said it. And I know he's not bluffing, because what did he do when Barack Obama became president? Got rid of the filibuster for federal district court judges and for appellate court judges. That is where the Republicans got the courage to do it for Neil Gorsuch's vote. They didn't have institutional courage. It was only in relationship to Democrats. Once again, Republicans play on the spectrum to where they orbit around the sun. That is Democrat politics. And now Mazie Hirono is saying, man, if we can keep Brett Kavanaugh off the bench, we might be able to keep this bad boy open until 2020. So y'all want to know the game plan? I'll tell you. Delay Brett Kavanaugh's nomination until after the midterm elections, if possible. They're already keeping him off from October 1st. Midterm elections may give us back, Democrats I'm talking about, may give the Democrats back a majority in the Senate. Guess what happens if the Democrats win the Senate? Which I don't expect to happen, but I'm telling you their thought process. Because they think stopping Brett Kavanaugh will give them even more juice for their base to turn up for the midterms, to where they can flip not only the House, but potentially flip the Senate. If Democrats win a Senate majority in 2018, guess what? No more presidential confirmations, presidential nominees being confirmed. Mm-mm. And if they're able to keep the Supreme Court with 8 members until 2020, that's their long play, folks. Right out of Mazie Hirono's mouth. I know Dianne Feinstein and Chuckie Duck Schumer are saying, psh, Mazie, psh, be quiet. Don't say it out loud. But they can't help it. Last thing I'll say, and I wrote this up. My good friend Kathy posted this on Facebook. I've talked at length. Man, I'm not going to have enough time to do a lot of stuff I want to do, but let me get to it. About Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. It literally is the playbook for what regressives do. He literally titled the book A Pragmatic Primer for Realistic Radicals. This is the book that he dedicated to Lucifer. Rules for Radicals, rule number 12. Quote, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Cut off the support network and isolate the target from sympathy. Is that not happening to Brett Kavanaugh right now? Isolate Brett Kavanaugh from sympathy. Go after people and not institutions. People hurt faster than institutions. This is cruel but very effective. Direct personalized criticism and ridicule works. Folks, that is what's happening to Brett Kavanaugh right now. Republicans in the Senate better wake up. I'd urge you to call your senator and tell them, listen, we're not playing falling for the okey-doke. Today is the day to stand up. If you run from the bully today, you're going to have to face him another day. I don't know about you, but I'm sick of running. The only way that they're going to learn that these tactics don't work, if you stand up to them. That's the only way. Now to the phone lines. I'm going to try my best to get through these. We'll go first to Tennessee, where Jerry is on the line. Jerry, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Abe. This is Jerry. I talked to you at the family conference.
Hey, Jerry. Thanks for calling in, man.
Hey, first of all, I love the give me back or this is my bike reference. Hilarious.
You caught that.
Number two. Man, I'm not keeping a real close watch on this, but I'm hearing it and I'm thinking, if this is the best they can come up with, how pathetic is that? I mean, that tells me, it almost corroborates that this is a good guy if that's the best they can come up with.
I agree with you, Jerry.
I mean, just a pathetic attempt to derail this whole thing.
It is. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. They keep doing it because it keeps working. They're operating from the music sheet that says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if you use it, and if you can use it to break their stuff, then break it. That's what's happening. Back to the phone lines. We go next to Ohio, where Ben is on the line. Ben, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Real quickly, as far as I understand it, the statute of limitations on any of these accusations has all run out. So there's no other place for these people to go. So what I would do is I would keep the schedule for the votes and put this guy into his position. And if the Democrats have a problem with it, they can bring it up and try to impeach him in the House and, you know, find him guilty in the Senate. The other thing I would do is I would launch lawsuits against all these accusers, because apparently, if they're telling the truth, they have known there's a sexual predator and a felon running around out there, and they did nothing to protect their fellow citizen. And we got to lock them all up. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Ben, for your call and your comments. I agree with you on the fact that they need to call for the vote. If I was Senator Grassley, I would say, man, you know what? We're voting tomorrow. That's what we're going to do. We're voting tomorrow. We had more than ample opportunity to bring this stuff up. Nobody said anything now. We're not going to allow the business of the Senate to be brought to a screeching halt because of unfounded allegations. The great state of Texas next, where Jerome is on the line. Jerome, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on your show. I really admire you, your ministry, and also,
Jerome, turn your radio down, man. Turn your radio down.
Yeah, I just did. I apologize for that. I know better.
No problem.
But,
go ahead.
I just wanted to say Kavanaugh represents a major threat for, you know, against the deep state and against the Democrat because he represents pro-life. And they have to continue with their child sacrifices in order to continue their, agenda on a spiritual level to serve. You know who they serve, and I know who they serve.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
And on the political level, he's a conservative and he's a constitutionalist. And as you can see, everything is moving away from the Constitution and moving away from conservatism. So they have to do everything that they can to stop him. But God is on the throne.
That's right. Thank you, Jerome, for your call and your comments. And listen, I want to remind everybody, search the scriptures. Every time you saw, and I said this before, when there was a promise of a deliverer coming to Egypt to liberate the Israelites, what was the plan? Let's get rid of all the baby boys. Kill them. There's a promise of a Messiah coming in the New Testament. What was the plan? Get rid of all the baby boys. Kill them. Wherever you find this covenant with death, you find a satanic, not just bad public policy, not just the differences of opinion. You find a satanic motivation. You literally have people advancing the idea that in order for me to have a better life, I need to be able to kill a child in the womb. That's insane. That's insane. It's the same thing we're trying to fight on the streets. So you want to tell me that you want to police our neighborhoods and prevent people from killing one another, for example, in Chicago, because they're killing one another in order to advance their own lives, but you want to make it legal in the abortion facilities in this country, and on top of that, you want taxpayers to pay for it? Folks, it's a death covenant that they're fighting to protect that really reveals the true allegiance that they have. We'll go next to Iowa to Rogers on the line. Roger, the last call of the day. Thank you for calling the program. Go right ahead. 30 seconds.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of silly that all these people are accusing Brett Kavanaugh of what he did 36 years ago in high school. And I would dare any of the people doing the accusing of to show their record 36 years ago when they were in high school.
You're spot on, Roger. And for many of them, you don't have to go that far back. What about all those payments made for sexual assault by these Congress members? Think about that.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.